Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat, the dog, Otto. Otto's excited tonight, and I don't know exactly why. No, I really don't know exactly why. You're really full of life today, Otto. That's the man. He's very popular, Otto, for good reason. By the way, somebody sent me an ad some company put out where they will make a stuffed version of your dog. It was a debate between my wife and me as to whether or not one would want that. She thought it was a lot of fun and cute. And I thought, I don't know, it sort of like demeans Otto. I mean, would I like a stuffed example of me? Or one of my kids? But I don't want to anthropomorphize animals, so maybe it's fine. Anyway, it was just an interesting thought. Anyway, great to be with you in this difficult time of the lockdown on much of the earth. It's hurting some people horribly, and that drives me crazy, because I'm not sure that this was necessary. And my column this week, which I don't normally make reference to, but I hope you will read. It's titled, "Is This, Has the Lockdown Worked?" I guess it could have been called, "Is the Lockdown Necessary?" But has the lockdown worked? And there's no perfect way to know. You'd have to ask some omniscient God, the omniscient God. Has it worked? We were told that millions would die just in the United States alone, 500,000 in Britain, for example. And it was on the basis of that the entire economy has been ruined. When you say the economy has been ruined, it sounds cold, like, oh, economy versus lives. Hey, come on, give me a break. But I'm not thinking economy. I'm thinking of the devastation in people's lives. My life is not being devastated economically. I'm losing money, but I'm in a wonderful position. And I don't mean losing money in stocks. I'm not an investor. Just in income. I speak a great deal around the world, and it's a factor in my life, to be honest with you. But it's okay. I make a living. But there are people who don't make a living. That's what economy means. People who don't make a living, people stuck in homes with an abusive person in their midst, people who will commit suicide because of the economic devastation. We have food lines in America for the first time since the Great Depression in the 1920s. That's what I'm talking about here. That's what, when you say the economy, we're not talking about how companies are doing. And by the way, companies matter because companies hire people. The left has this bizarre notion, oh, company schmumpany. Company, who else hires people? Governments? I guess they would like that. But the where does the government get the money from? It gets it from the income taxes that companies and individuals pay. So I don't know if it's been necessary. And I will read to you some data in a moment, but that brings me to the opening before I take your questions. And it's about experts. And I had said, I think on a previous one, right? Was it on a Fireside Chat or my radio show that I had mentioned that science has replaced religion as the religion? And so experts are the clergy, as it were. Whereas you had priests and ministers, in religion, you now have the priests and ministers of science are the experts or scientists. Let me tell you, I want to talk about experts just for a moment. I've said this all of my life. This is completely not new. I've written it. I have said it, the notion that we look to experts for policy as opposed to for their expertise. If I want to know if I or a loved one had cancer, clearly I would go to an oncologist because an oncologist, a cancer doctor, knows cancer. clearly I want their knowledge. How could I combat cancer without an oncologist? I understand that. But how much money society should pay for oncology research is not decided by oncologists. That is decided by society. The notion that an expert has wisdom as opposed to knowledge is silly. The best example, one of the best examples is scientists made the atom bomb, not lay people, scientists. You had to have a scientist to have that, the knowledge of how to split the atom and so on. And create, what is it, fusion, I believe. And clearly scientists made the atom bomb, but it was not scientists who decided on whether it should be dropped on Japan to end World War II. That was decided by the president of the United States who had no science background. His background was in politics, and before that, running a retail store in Missouri. Because we understand that knowledge and wisdom are not necessarily related at all. I'll give you another example. And I know this is so long ago that I know how long I've been saying this. I remember an ad in the New York Times many years ago, something like, I don't know, 100 Nobel Prize winners come out against capital punishment for murder. And I remember saying on the radio, and this is a long time ago, why do I care what a Nobel Prize winner in, let's say, chemistry thinks about capital punishment? It's a non sequitur. It's truly silly. You might as well have 100 football players come out for capital punishment. You would say, well, that's ridiculous. Well, what do football players have to do with capital punishment? What do Nobel Prize winners have to do with capital punishment? The issue is a wisdom issue, not an expertise issue. So this is a terrible problem in an age that doesn't value wisdom. It only values knowledge. And so wisdom is everything, though. Wisdom is everything. There are people who never went to high school, let alone never got a PhD, who have a lot of wisdom. My grandparents never went to high school. They had a lot of wisdom. They understood life. That, by the way, is a direct result of the death of religion in the West and in other parts of the world, for that matter. But I'll speak about the West because religion gives wisdom. Not that every religious person is wise. Of course not. There are dumb, foolish religious people. But overwhelmingly, we got our wisdom from religion. Get our knowledge from secular sources. That's correct. That's why I don't look for scientific knowledge to the Bible. That's not what it's there for. It's there to give me wisdom. But wisdom is the key to a good world. Good intentions without wisdom lead to bad things, lead to evil. That's why there are so many fools at the universities in the Western world, because they have knowledge and no wisdom. So I am only impressed with experts' expertise. But so whether or not to bring it to the current moment, whether or not to shut down society and put tens of millions just in America alone out of work, and a billion people in the world, at least a billion, having no income whatsoever. I remember reading an article early on in this lockdown of a poor guy in Bangladesh who produces jeans for American companies. The man has no income. He can't feed his family now. And Bangladesh doesn't exactly have a lot of wealth so that they could give this guy 3 months' income to sustain him. When you close down America or England or France or Germany, you're closing down Bangladesh and India and Vietnam as well. That's not a decision I want an epidemiologist to make. or a biologist or a medical doctor. That's not their province. That's why this should not be made. But this whole decision should not be made by them. But politicians and the media, they worship experts. So as soon as the Imperial College London announced, 2.2 million deaths in America, 500,000 in the United Kingdom, then immediately they went into lockdown. Boris Johnson in the UK did not want to lock down the UK. That report so scared him. 500,000 Brits is a lot of Brits. That he closed down the society. And then they immediately changed, like a week later or so, they changed it to 100,000 and then to 20,000. And then they said, oh, it's because of the lockdown. How do you know it's because of the lockdown? How do you know? So I'm gonna read you something. I normally don't read you anything because I just talk to you from my heart and my brain. But I have to because I want to get it right. So this is from my column. Again, I really hope you'll read. Has the lockdown worked? So listen to this. There was an article in the Los Angeles Times just this past week. This was the title of the article. California's coronavirus death toll is way below New York's. Here's why. Okay? Well, that's interesting. Why is California's is way below? And California's the most populous state. Plus, California got an immense number, many more people from China, where the virus started, than New York did. So you would think California, with gigantic cities like New York, LA, obviously the most obvious, San Diego, San Francisco, there should have been a lot of coronavirus deaths in California, but very few. So they say, here's why. That's the article. So they report a man named Nicholas Jewell, identified as a University of California, Berkeley biostatistician, explained why California had so many fewer deaths than New York. Quote, just putting those controls in place a single day earlier makes a huge, huge difference in the growth rates, Jewell said, referring to California Governor Gavin Newsom's lockdown order of March 19th, okay? Whereas the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, waited three more days. So according to this biostatistician at the University of California, Berkeley, those 3 days made all the difference in the world. That's why there are so many more deaths in New York than there are in California. So I thought, look, am I a biostatistician? No. So you would think most readers, including the people who wrote the article, go, oh, gee, that makes sense. But now listen to this. So then they go on to write, the article added a line that undermined the whole thesis of the article. Quote, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis didn't impose a stay-at-home order until April 1st. Apparently, it never occurred to the Los Angeles Times authors to even look up Florida's death rates. The non-conservative media have been largely worthless during this crisis. Intellectually vapid, this is what I'm writing. And along with experts, the primary stokers of panic. What's the matter, Mr. Otto? You know what? Sometimes he's troubled by talk of the coronavirus. I keep telling him he's not a candidate. Megan, are you going to try to put him back in his bed? Okay, he's a bulldog. If he goes back to his bed, I will be a very impressed guy. He did. Well done. I'm shocked. All's good, Otto. All's well that ends well. Okay. So listen to this. This is really important. If a few days later for California saved all these lives compared, a few days later, excuse me, in New York, the lockdown a few days later is why so many more New Yorkers have died than Californians, then What about days later in Florida? Florida should have even more deaths than New York, correct? If a few days delay in ordering the lockdown of a state makes a, quote, huge, huge difference, unquote, in death rates, Florida should have had a worse death rate than New York, let alone California. Yet Florida's death rate is among the lowest in the United States, despite the fact that it has the largest percentage of elderly people as in any state except for Maine. So isn't that a fairly powerful argument that maybe the lockdown isn't the reason that the deaths aren't reaching so high and are in fact going down? Maybe it's not the lockdown. So on the basis of modeling, that was the whole basis, computer models, lives have been destroyed. Millions have been, if not destroyed, horribly hurt on the basis of these models. Maybe they're right, but the evidence doesn't prove it. That's what I mean by panic and why I felt from the beginning that we had more hysteria than anything else. And I would like to remind you all, as I do constantly, the regular flu kills between 30 and 70,000 a year. As of this moment in the United States, it's 20,000 from the coronavirus. Even if it were 50,000, if it were 80,000, 100,000, I mean, obviously there's a certain point where you have to say, look, the death rate is so, the death numbers are so high, we have no choice. But those are not the numbers. So then you get people writing this almost heartless stuff. Oh, so what are you saying? That it's stocks are more important than lives? It has nothing to do with stocks. Nothing. It has to do with people's jobs, livelihood, being stuck in a home with an abusive person. I'll bet you the divorce rate goes up as a result of this, just among other things. There are terrible prices being paid. God, I think, because I always eat out. I just love to. Not at fancy places. I just like eating out. I did a lot of the writing of all my books in restaurants. And I, you know, I think of the number of people employed by restaurants in the United States and all over the West. The guys in the kitchen, the women and the guys at the tables, the person who checks you in, the person who does the tables. I mean, it's just the dishwashers. They're not employed now. What are they doing? So the issue isn't you don't care about the debt. If I mean, theoretically, then why don't we shut down the country every year for the flu? And I always ask another question. If the only criterion is how many lives will be taken, we should never raise the speed limit. Every time we raise the speed limit, we know that thousands more people will die. Yet we are willing to raise the speed limit because we don't ask, will more people die? We ask, what is better for society? Of course there are prices paid. If we wanted to abolish all deaths on the highway, we would abolish the automobile. But a lot of terrible things would happen if we abolished the automobile. Okay, I hope that makes some of that more clear. Time for your questions. Okay, here we go.
Hey, Dennis. I'm Hip from the Netherlands. I'm a member of the Prager Force team. And I would like to know that how do you think the stimulus packages in Europe compare to the US? Like here in the Netherlands, people, the stimulus packages are 90% of the wages. And in Denmark, people are getting paid 75% of the wages. How do you think that compares to the US, where people are only getting a singular stimulus package of $1,200? And that may take some time till they get that. Do you think Trump's approach is the correct one, or do you think the European approach is better?
Well, thank you. Dank u, as you would say in the Netherlands. That was a good one. Great to hear from you. Actually, a few answers to that. I actually do prefer the European approach, but it wasn't Trump's approach. It was Congress. It's not a matter of Trump's desire in these matters. It's Congress in the United States that passes these budgetary matters. I think it was a haphazard thing that was made up in haste. I prefer the idea. I wish employers were given the following. Here is the wages or a percentage of the wages that you would pay. You do not have to pay your mortgage or your rent for your business. The landlord does not have to pay the mortgage to the bank. It's as if these 2 months never existed. So you won't have those expenses, and we will cover the expenses to your employees. I think that would have been ultimately a better thing. However, I want to say something that is true for Europe and the United States. Your generation, your generation is being given such a massive debt. No generation in history has been given the national debts that your generation is being given by my generation, at least by the liberals and progressives and leftists of my generation, who have believed that the government should take over more and more of life, pay more and more money out to more and more people. And where are they going to get the money? If the taxes don't bring that money in, where is the money going to come in? Where's it going to come from? This notion that the government should take care of people sounds beautiful until you ask the question Margaret Thatcher, the great British leader, asks. Who is going to pay for it? Socialism works till you run out of people paying for it. Socialism takes other people's money to pay for its programs. Socialism has never raised a nickel. That's American terms for 5 cents. Has never raised a pound, a peso, a euro, whatever currency you might use. Governments don't make money. Individuals and individual companies make money. Then they give to the government of the what they have made, and that's how the government has the money to do what it needs to do. We're going to run out of money. So you know what the United States is doing? It's printing money. It's printed another, I guess, $2 trillion to pay for this. And they're going to do another trillion probably. Printing money? That means money becomes worthless. You might as well use monopoly money. We'll just declare monopoly money is now real money. Somebody's going to pay it down the road, or there's going to be terrible social chaos. So, let's have everything free, college free, healthcare free. Give people a basic wage. Where does that money come from? You either print it or you take it from people who are making money. There's no third possibility. That's called a responsible question. And responsible questions need responsible answers, not irresponsible answers. So I ask again, who's going to pay all this? All this debt. Okie doke, next question. Benjamin, 20 years old, Gainesville, Florida. Greetings, Mr. Prager. What are your thoughts on prayer? Do you think God answers prayers regardless of whether or not he does? Do you think it is worth praying to God? So to answer the last part, yes, I do think it's very good to pray. Of course it is. It puts you in communion with the ultimate reality of the universe, or if you will, our Father in heaven, which I do believe. I think it's a great thing. But about God answering prayers, if answering prayers mean, does God do what I would like God to do? The answer is not usually. I must admit, in my whole life, I have asked God for something twice. It was very, very, once I was a kid, and I prayed to God that my mother wouldn't yell at me for breaking the expensive vase in the living room. I was about 10, 11 years old. Amazingly, she didn't yell at me. And I don't know why I didn't conclude, hey, prayer works. But I didn't make that conclusion. But I did. I'll never forget. I was so scared of getting really yelled at. It was a very expensive vase. I remember it well. It's from Italy. And I did then prayed one more time about 50 years later. And that also was answered, as it happens. But I still don't, I don't ask God, other than those, I never ask God for anything except for others. And that's not my question. My question is not what do I want from God? I am consumed with what does God want from me? That's what I think a truly religious person should ask. What does God want from me? Not what do I want from God? I don't like religious people for whom God is a celestial butler. Our butler in heaven, please deliver the following. But I do think people should pray. And if something terrible exists and your child has cancer, I think it's perfectly appropriate to say, God, if it's possible, and it's if you could bring some miracle here, you're opening your heart to God. That's fine. Okay, 17-year-old Georgia. I don't have the name. So is it Georgia, U.S., or is it Georgia a person?
No, it's U.S.
Georgia, U.S., 17-year-old. Can you please do a fireside chat on the ridiculous idea society is pushing that success and performance is the most important thing in life, when in fact it should be character and doing what is right, what God wants from you? How ironic. It's what I just said. Also, God bless you and pray for you for all you have done. You're doing an amazing job teaching people the truth about politics and so many other issues. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's what we're trying to do. I have done, in fireside chats, I have done this. And I've written a column on this, or at least one column. I'm the one that came up with this idea. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but if an adult asks your kid, hey, so what do you want to be when you grow up? You should teach your kid to say a good person, not an astronaut, not a lawyer, not a doctor, not an engineer, a good person. See how they react to that. I told my kids, I didn't care what they did for a living. I didn't even care if they went to college. I only care that they were good people. That's what I told them. And I, since I have two boys, good men. Okay, Eric, 15, Budapest, Hungary. Good day, Mr. Prager. Eric, I showed one of your fireside chats to one of my teachers in which you stated, quote, the bigger the government, the less free you are. He then stated that he thinks that you think that therefore, quote, cooperation allows people to be free. He would like to ask if you believe that cooperation would provide people with freedom. Thank you. Can you give Otto a rub for me? I rub him plenty, and I will. So I don't quite get your teacher's response. Yes, the bigger the government, the less free you are. This is a perfect example. The government is controlling people. In the state of Michigan right now, if you have a second home, a little place by a lake, you can't drive there because the governor of Michigan is so controlling over people's behavior at this time, you can't even get in your car and drive somewhere. Otto is now shaking the light fixture. This is what happens when Otto is not asleep. This is rare, though. This is really rare. Yeah, I don't know what's agitating him. Then he's looking around. Maybe he wants to read a book. You know, so many books in the room, and you never know what it does for him. But I don't understand your teacher's reaction that he thinks that I think that cooperation allows people to be free. Cooperation is not a freedom issue. Big government is a freedom issue. People should cooperate, but I don't know where that comes into the issue of freedom. But the bigger the government, I have a motto, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen. That is correct. The American dream, and I think it's good for every country, was to have small government and have people take care of themselves, take care of their families, take care of their communities. The bigger the government, the smaller the citizen, and the less the freedom. That's exactly right. We are losing that ideal in America because so many young people are taught by people who believe in big government. What's our story on the... We pretty much hit the time. Too bad, got a lot of great questions. Look, these are very important issues. Who should make decisions for our society? This whole issue of experts. Have we done the right thing with the virus? These are very big deals. Anyway, by the way, a reminder, I did for PragerU, I conducted a Passover Seder. And whoa, boy, I'll tell you, this is a lot. Listen, I'm amazed this is actually functioning without everything falling. You might enjoy it. Even if you're not a Jew, you will, I think, you will find it just a fascinating glimpse into this famous ritual on Passover of the Seder. And now Snoopy is showing up in Otto's bed. This is a live wire evening, I got to tell you. I feel like a traffic cop. Anyway, it's great to be with you. Take care of yourselves. I'll see you next week. Dennis Prager on behalf of Otto and Snoopy. Bye-bye. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.